Welcome to Hope with Bishop Terry Hill Jr. and the Citadel Church of Jacksonville. We invite you to stay tuned as Bishop Hill brings to you a relevant word for the real world. Come with me now to a service already in progress.
Chapter 5, we're going to begin our reading at verse 1. I believe I need all of this text this morning. And I'm soliciting your prayers. I'm feeling a couple of different ways, so I'm not kind of sure as far as the tone of this particular preachment, but I know that God already knows what he wants said. So, if you will, again, Joshua chapter 5, I'm reading from the New Living Translation. Beginning at verse 1, when all the Amorite kings west of the Jordan and all the Canaanite kings who lived along the Mediterranean coast heard how the Lord had dried up the Jordan River so the people of Israel could cross, they lost heart and were paralyzed with fear because of them. At that time, the Lord told Joshua, "Make flint knives and circumcise this second generation of Israelites." So Joshua made flint knives and circumcised the entire male population of Israel at Gibeah Haaretz. So Joshua had to circumcise them because all the men who were old enough to fight in battle when they left Egypt had died in the wilderness. Those who left Egypt had all been circumcised, but none of those born after the Exodus during the years in the wilderness had been circumcised. The Israelites had traveled in the wilderness for 40 years until all the men who were old enough to fight in battle when they left Egypt had died, for they had disobeyed the Lord. And the Lord vowed he would not let them enter the land that he had sworn to give us, a land flowing with milk and honey. So Joshua circumcised their sons, those who had grown up to take their father's places, for they had not been circumcised on the way to the promised land. After all the males had been circumcised, they rested in the camp until they were healed. Then the Lord said to Joshua, "Today I have rolled away the shame of your slavery in Egypt." So that place has been called Gilgal to this day. When the Israelites were camped at Gilgal on the plains of Jericho, they celebrated Passover on the evening of the 14th day of the first month. That the very next day, they began to eat unleavened bread and roasted grain harvested from the land. No manna appeared on the day they first ate from the crops of the land, and it was never seen again. Wow. So, from that time on, the Israelites ate from the crops of Canaan. When Joshua was near the town of Jericho, he looked up and saw a man standing in front of him with sword in hand. Joshua went up to him and demanded, "Are you friend or foe?" "Neither one," he replied. "I am the commander of the Lord's army." At this, Joshua fell with his face to the ground in reverence. "I am at your command," Joshua said. "What do you want your servant to do?" The commander of the Lord's army replied, "Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy." And Joshua did as he was told. Father, thank you for what you will say to every one of us. All of us need to hear your voice. So speak clearly, specifically. Speak salvifically so that what is heard in our hearts would change our lives. Cause us, Father, after hearing your word, to be strengthened to go and live the word we've heard. We thank you in advance for what you will do in this moment that you speak to your people. In Jesus' name, amen. Please be seated in the presence of the Lord. I want to talk for a few moments with this thought in your mind. It happened at Gilgal. It happened at Gilgal. It's an interesting thing, and we know it well, that even as much as we learned on last week, the children of Israel have crossed over the Jordan River, And God, having brought them through the second generation of Israelites in the same manner that he had brought over their grandparents, their parents and grandparents, when he brought them over across the Red Sea, they now have to be very careful about what their next steps are, what their movements are to be, as they have now entered into this land that God has given to them. It's very important, and I don't want any of us to miss this, but it is important what you do after God brings you over. What things you do, the steps you take are important, because when God brings you over, the last thing you want to do is lose the momentum of your last miracle. Is anybody hearing what I'm saying? You'd be surprised at how many people God brings out of a situation into a new situation. The number of people that God heals, delivers, and sets free. And the moment he does that, they forget quickly what it took to get them to that place. And as a result, Tia, they start living differently, almost as if a miracle had never occurred. Have you ever forgiven somebody of something only to find that they turned around and started doing exactly the very thing that you had just forgiven them of, but before you had forgiven them, they were wanting your forgiveness. They were desirous of you renewing relationship with them. You ever had somebody do something to you and you were well within your right, completely justified to never again talk to them, but because you decided that you were going to let them back in your good graces, the last thing you wanted to see was them going and doing something that you found an affront or offensive to you? Again, this just must be my life. Nobody else has these experiences but me. Have you ever been that person that prayed that God would do something in your life only to find that the moment he did it, you forgot he had done it and how you were before he had did it, and you went back to doing what you were doing before God had done what you had asked him to do? It's obviously just me. Let me ask you, when was the last time you actually praised God for the last thing that he did for you? Or have you already forgotten the working of God's power in your life? Unfortunately, too many of us forget. And as a result, not only do we stop praising for what God has done, we stop acting like God actually did it. I'll talk to you in a moment. I don't need that much time, but let me make a good foundation. Maria, some of us, we ask God to bless us, and then when he blesses us, we go and we respond with behavior that does not seem to be incumbent upon a person who's been blessed. And so that's what the condition of the Israelites is. In all honesty, they need to continue to live like they have just crossed over into promised land. Some things are going to happen in this particular place to ensure that that happens. Let me tell you why it's necessary, how careful they are about what they do, because it says in verse number one, that when the other folk heard how the Lord had dried up the Jordan River so the people of Israel could cross, they lost heart and were paralyzed with fear because of them. Here's something that's important, because when others see God is with you, it changes how they see you. This is why it's important how you cross over and what you do, Sister Vita, after God works a miracle in your life, because there are people who are looking at you and they know that what has just happened for you, only God could have done it. And when they see God working with you, they change how they look at you. They're not looking at you because like they are because you're so great, because you're so cute, because you're so fine, because you got so much money. No, they're looking at you because they're trying to figure out how what they know of you could have actually brought you to a place that you are as blessed as you are, as connected as you are, as favored as you are. You ought to tell your neighbor. Matter of fact, I said I wasn't going to do no tell your neighbors this morning. Tell, just shout, it ain't me, it's God. It's real. It's real. When people look at you and see God at work in you, they express more. They will actually feel more than they express. They will change how they treat you when they see God is with you. They will change how they look at you when they see God is with you. The problem comes when other folks see God is with us, but we don't act like God is with us. So now we have behavior that is deceptive. It undermines the work of God in our lives. And so it's important, because that is probably what is at stake as the children of Israel now camp on the other side of the Jordan. And God brings them to this place after, according to chapter 4, they establish the memorial. The Lord gives Joshua specific instructions about what they are to do. They are in the place that is soon to be named Gilgal. Gilgal is on the east border of Jericho, where the Israelites have now encamped after crossing the Jordan. They've set up the 12 stones, and it is here that they will celebrate the Passover for the first time in over 40 years. And it is here in the desert, those born rather in the desert, who will be circumcised. Verse 9 tells us that Gilgal is so named because the Lord says, "Today I have rolled away the shame of your slavery." Please don't miss this. "Today I have rolled away the shame of your slavery." The word Gilgal literally means to roll. It actually sounds like the Hebrew word galal, which means to roll. So now catch what God is doing here. All right, God is saying that I brought you across the Jordan River. You are preparing to go and conquer lands that I have promised to you. But before you conquer anything, there's some stuff about you I need to roll away. There's some character traits, yes, some proclivities you got, that as blessed as you are, they will stop you from being as victorious as you should be if I don't roll it away. Let's work. Now I feel good. I feel, Brother Stephen, I know what it's like when you get comfortable. Now I'm comfortable. I'm there now. Here it is. To roll away. Now what's interesting is when we normally read this text, we assume that God is rolling the stuff. Let me stretch you a little bit in your faith, because Elder McBride, God's not just rolling stuff here, he's rolling them. That's scary. Watch this. Reverend Hill, God is not simply saying, "I'm going to just roll what's on you, off of you. I'm going to roll you." So when I was coming up in school, you know, we practiced these little drills, you know, particularly fire drills. And the fire drill went such that when we heard the buzzer, you stopped what you were doing, formed a line, found the nearest exit, and in an orderly fashion, exited the building where you were and went to a safe place, right? We practiced that drill every so often because they wanted us to be aware of what we were to do in the event of a fire and we heard the alarm. One day, they went a little further and they told us not what just to do to get to safety. They told us that if ever you are on fire, If ever the flame catches you, you can't get in line in an orderly fashion. However, here's what you do if ever you are on fire. You stop, you drop, and you roll. Is anybody? So now I'm trying to understand. You know, I'm a child, elementary school, and so the teacher, seeing the confusion on my face, I'm sure she continued a little more with her explanation. Here's what they wanted us to understand: that sometimes we could do things that would enhance the blaze. But if there was ever a sure way to cancel the fire, if you were ever engulfed, if you stopped and dropped and rolled on the ground, you could extinguish your problem. Now, I really want to holler right here, but I got way too much to give to you. Understand this. God is saying that there are some things that have engulfed you, and the only way I'm going to get it off of you is to roll you. I got to put you in a position where everything about you stops, and I make some stuff drop, so that I can roll you and everything that's connected to you will be affected by the role. Lean in. I want to bless you. Some of us have got more on us that's damaging us than we realize. And the reason it is as bad as it is, even though we know it hurts, we see what it's destroying, is because it's, and it's still able to do what it's doing, is because we won't stop long enough to roll that mess up off of us. You ought to, don't doggone it. Somebody shout, roll it off. God is saying, I want to roll away the disgrace of everything negative you've ever been through. I'm not going to roll away what you learned, but I'm going to roll away the shame of how you learned it. He's not going to roll away the memories, just the mentality that is bred inside of you. He's not going to roll away the strength you gained, but he will roll away the pain of the struggle you had to endure. Without the disgrace of where you have come from and where you have been, you will change your perspective of everything you've ever experienced in your life. Talk, Terry Jr., I'm doing the best I can. You and I, if God rolls us, we will see everything about our lives differently. And when you see it differently, you will echo the words of the psalmist in chapter 119, verse 71, where he says, it was good for me to be afflicted, that I might learn your decrees. God is about to roll some stuff about you. I ain't gonna ask you to do it now, but I dare you, those that can get on the ground and then get back up of your own power, when you get back home, just drop on the ground and just roll it. Say, God, I don't know everything that's on me. I know it's some stuff you want to change, so roll it up off of me. Roll me until I'm different. Roll me until I talk better. Roll me until I treat people right. Roll me until I forget that it was not me that did it, or rather I remember that it was you that brought me out. I'm sorry. Touch your neighbor and tell him he wants to roll some stuff off of you. He does. He does. He does. The Lord wants to roll some stuff. Let me tell you what's going to happen in the rolling. Can I help you? Can I help you? Or maybe you just need to praise right there. Is there anybody that knows you got some stuff on fire? You got some stuff that God needs to extinguish. You got some bad behavior. You got some bad thoughts. You got some people you have not deleted out of your phone. You've not eliminated that text thread. And God says, this is the last day. I'm going to let you be that jacked up. I'm about to roll it away. About to roll it away. I'm about to roll it away. You know what happens when God rolls some stuff? You end up different. You might be disheveled, but you'll be different. Oh my God, be seated. Let me move through this. Watch this. Here's the first thing that God affects when he rolls you. He rolls away shame. It's simple. It's right there in the text at verse number 9. He rolls away shame, but he rolls away shame by securing a standard of obedience. Don't miss this. The way God is able to roll away shame is through a process called circumcision. You should have shouted earlier on the rolling, because this here, you ain't going to dance on this. God rolls away the shame by literally telling them, I'm going to put you again in a place of extreme vulnerability. Ain't nobody say amen on the right side. Let me try the left. Crystal, God is saying, the way I will take away your shame is by putting you in a vulnerable position. Stay with me. Stay with me. Victory comes after vulnerability. That's not on the PowerPoint, but you might need to write that down. That's good for somebody's soul right now. That in all honesty, some of us are trying too fast to get the victory, and we've never been vulnerable. And the trip with that, Brother Jesus, is that if you get to victory without ever having been vulnerable, you'll be cocky. If you never, God, I feel you now. If you've never had a moment where you questioned that God actually wanted to do it for you, you will not appreciate when it is done. And so God, I feel like running. God has to put you in a place where you are as vulnerable as you've ever been.
Watch what happens. Watch what happens. Because it is your vulnerability that shows how true your trust is. It is your vulnerability that shows how true your trust is. Some of us say we trust God, but we say it out of our strength. It's easy to say, I believe God for my finances if you got $100,000 in the bank. It's easy to say, I believe God will be a friend if you got a boo, a bae, or a boyfriend. Y'all ain't talking to me. It's easy to talk about how God will provide if you got a job, a house, and two cars. But let me get some of that stuff up off of you, and then let's talk about he's Jehovah Jireh. Because you don't know he's a provider until after he provides. Woo!
Okay. I'm almost out of time and I am not even finished with the first point. But somebody just holler at your neighbor. You got to trust him when it hurts.
Watch this now. Trust him when you're confused. Trust him when there's still pain in your body. Trust him when you don't understand. Trust him when everybody tells you no. Trust him then. Somebody knows what it's like to have to trust God when you don't understand what he's doing, when his plans seem to contradict the word that he gave you, when everything around you looks like it's not gonna work. That's when he asked the question, can you still trust me? Will you still believe that I told you what I was gonna do and that I am a man of my word? Have I got a witness here? Somebody ought to find one neighbor and tell him you got to trust God even when you can't trace him. Trust God even when it doesn't feel good. Trust God even when it doesn't look right. Trust God when you have no money in your pocket. Trust God when all of your friends say it's not gonna work. Trust God when they tell you it's too much for you. There's no way you can handle it. Somebody say, I've learned to trust in Jesus. I've learned to trust in God. Have I got a witness? Is there anybody in here that can say I trust him? Come hell or high water, I trust him. Shout yes.
Listen. Some of us, I guess we'll get to it sooner or later. No, sit down. I got to give it to you now. Hold on. You got to hear this. Really, you've got to hear this. Okay. So wait. God is getting ready. Woo! Let me tell you what happens. If they praise, let them praise. This is good. Watch this. They're going to be made vulnerable. As a matter of fact, the reason they have to circumcise is because there are too many who came in after covenant had been made. Don't miss it. They were a part of the promise, but not a part of the process. And the only way he's going to get them to fully enjoy the promise is to make them a part of the process.
And the only way they could get in the process was by circumcision. Don't miss this. The only way you can fully enjoy all God is doing is if something gets cut. Okay. Listen, Carla. If they don't get cut, they resemble what they left. Let me help you. Let me help you, Brother Kevin. If they don't cut it off, it keeps on them the shame of their slavery. Because circumcision was the intentional cut that identified those who had been cut as being a part of the covenant. You just missed it. Basically, if it could be an easily visible thing, everybody walking would have been able to be identified by the cut. Okay. I'm sorry. So it's the cut that lets everybody know who's in covenant. Okay, you don't get it. Let me help you. You ever been, let me talk to every group where you've had to pledge or go through some kind of initiation, be it football or a sorority or a fraternity. If you've ever been in that situation, somebody just shout, yeah, that's me. Okay, so you, for those eight people, this, you'll get it. When you go through the initiation or for a degree or in anything where there's a process, when you go through the process, there's a different conversation you have with people who haven't been through the process. There's a difference between being an AKA and wanting to be an AKA. You can buy pink and green because they're not proprietary colors. Crayola has not licensed pink and green to just AKA. So everybody can wear it. But only those who've been through the process can have a conversation about what it means to have crossed over. Y'all ain't kidding. So what God is trying to do is through the process of circumcision help you to understand and appreciate what it really means to cross over. Because if you cross over and haven't been cut, then you'll have shame even in your success. And so what God is trying to say is, I don't want anybody who's really connected to get into the promised land and not fully appreciate all that's in the promise. And so I want to roll away your shame if you don't mind being cut. What's the shame? God is trying to tell us, I don't want your disqualifying trait to take away from your destiny. So if you don't let me cut that stuff off of you, you'll be over here shouting with everybody else and then go home and not have the same victory. I should have ended when y'all were up. That's what I should have done. I should have let you go right there. Because see, sometimes some of us understand what it's like to be in the best place we've ever been in our lives and still have shame on you. Some of us know what it's like to be in the most prosperous place in our lives and yet know we don't deserve to be there. And so since we know we don't deserve to be there, we're ashamed of even our level of participation. And so you wonder why sometimes, Reverend Hill, some people are not as connected, don't do as much as they should. It's because they know they've not been cut. And so you have to be quiet if you ain't been through the process. Y'all ain't talking to me. If everybody else has been through it and I ain't been through nothing, I gotta keep my mouth shut because my testimony ain't a testimony. I ain't had the test. And so here you are, some of us, blessed and embarrassed. Let me
tell you, since y'all won't be honest, let me tell you what had happened. Let me tell you what had happened. About 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, Deaconess George, I was awarded an honorary doctorate of divinity degree. Okay? And so for a little while, now it wasn't me, but other folk, when they read that in the bio, because I mean I wasn't gonna keep it out, thank the Lord. So I put it in the little bio, right? So when I put it in the bio, what would happen, Sister Ron, is people would introduce me as Dr. Terry Hill, right? And so until this one time.
You've just received Hope with Bishop Terry Hill Jr. and the Citadel Church of Jacksonville. You may order a copy of this message in its entirety for a gift of any amount by calling the church office at 904-699-7962. You may also write to us at P.O. Box 350414, Jacksonville, Florida 32235. When you call or write, please reference the date the broadcast aired. We invite you to share and worship with us every Sunday at 9 a.m. and every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Our church is located at 8050 Lone Star Road. For directions and more information about the church, visit our website at thecitadelchurch.com. Again, that's thecitadelchurch.com. Be sure to tune in next week at the same time for Hope with Bishop Terry Hill.